Let the record show that the House Transportation Committee convened at 1:04, according to the clock on the wall, and that the following House members were present: Representative Lynn, Representative Feige, Representative Isaacson, and Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Rep. Wilson. And I'd like to recognize our staff today. Nancy Hemingway is over here. She's our House Recording Secretary. And on my left is Betsy, our LIO moderator. And Becky Rooney is my committee aide. So we will try to get started because a lot of the members have subcommittee budget hearings to go to. We're double booked right now trying to get all of our closing budget subcommittees done. So anyway, before we start, please shut off your cell phones. And we'll have today a presentation from the Department of Transportation on our state railroad plan. So Murray, would you please come forward and state your name and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's great to be back here. My name is Murray Walsh. I'm a special assistant in the commissioner's office at the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And one of my jobs is to manage development of the state rail plan. I am probably more familiarly known as the Roads to Resources Manager. So this is one of my jobs. The Department of Transportation is developing a rail plan for the state of Alaska. It's been underway for just a few months. It'll take most of a year to do. And now I hope I'm pressing the right button. Why we're doing it is partly because funding from the federal government has been the case in the past. It's expected in the future, and you have to have a plan for how you use federal money. But it's a good idea. The state has a great interest in the railroad. It's a good idea for the state to be doing rail planning with or without the involvement of the federal government. There is the Passenger Rail Investment and Improvement Act of 2008 that was passed and signed by President Bush that contains lots of provisions that you'd expect to see for any kind of a transportation planning effort. So we are following up on that now.
Okay, sorry, Marie. Just want to have it for the record that Representative Gaddis has joined us. And, sorry, go ahead.
So the plan will identify needs and sources and be the typical kind of guiding document that the state needs for any kind of transportation mode. PREA is the somewhat recently enacted Rail Act, and the word passenger conveys something of an emphasis on that aspect of the act, but it's still intended to address passenger and rail, or freight. These are the purposes of a state rail plan, basically to describe what the state wants to see happen. And you'll see as we get into this that it can be on big things like rail extensions and on small things like at-grade intersections that need to be made safer and that kind of thing. Why us? The state statute assigns to us the responsibility for planning all modes of transportation. There is more than one railroad in the state. The one you are most familiar with, of course, is the Alaska Railroad. And there's also the White Pass and Yukon route rising from Skagway that has a tremendous amount of history associated with it, a gold rush history that I think fascinates most of us. So. And rails begin and end somewhere, and there's a place where freight or people are loaded onto a train or offloaded, and where do they go next, and how do we address it? So it makes sense that the Transportation Department would do the rail plan. These are our railroads. You can see that Alaska Railroad rises from Seward and ends just outside of Fairbanks. There is a project underway to lengthen it that's going to be a long time coming, I'm afraid, but they're working on a plan to actually extend it all the way to Delta Junction, but that has not been funded, just the first phase of it.
Murray, is that the, on our map, is that the next kind of intersection as it goes down that, that highway? Is Delta the next intersection there?
I went ahead and jumped ahead to the Delta slide. That's the route. Where you see the yellow there is a bridge crossing of the Tanana River. That's what's being built now. That's what's funded now. Well, altogether, that's 81 miles of railroad to go from North Pole to Delta Junction. It's a lot of money. The route has been selected. A lot of the environmental work has been done. And that bridge will have independent utility. The military will be able to use it to bring artillery, track vehicles, to do test firing at the facility there. And I'm told it's going to be one of the very few places in the world where you'll be able to do that. So the United States and its allies, I suppose if you have a personal tank, you could go up there and shoot it with the Army. But most of us don't have one. Neighborhood parking issues associated with it. Okay, why railroads are important has to do with the economics of them. The ability to move lots of weight for more efficiently than any other on-land way. So the more stuff we can move on rail, the less congestion we have on our highways, less wear and tear, and makes the cost of living more affordable, makes industry possible that might not otherwise be possible. So there's a lot of reasons for focusing your attention on rail where you have a mission. That is a pretty good example of why it is rail's important. You can move one ton of cargo on a truck, and you'll move that ton 59 miles. But on a train, you can move that ton of cargo 469 miles for 1 gallon of fuel. Certainly, ships are cheaper, but it's not that much difference. And I guess the principal reason there is that ocean is a little flatter than some of the country railroads have to go across. Passenger service generally falls into three kinds. There's the intercity travel, going from Anchorage to Fairbanks, that kind of thing, which the Alaska Railroad does. The third kind is excursion, which is riding the train for the sheer pleasure of it, or to see the countryside that it crosses, and White Pass specializes in that kind of experience. What we don't do in Alaska now is commuter rail, but we are expected to at least look at the prospects for that over time. So we talked about the Northern Rail Extension. The other project that you heard about quite extensively not long ago was the Port McKenzie Extension, and I will leave the discussion of that to others. I should mention that if you have questions that I can't answer, there are folks from the Alaska Railroad in the room today.
I've got a couple questions. So the different colors of the railroad in this picture right here, what parts are current, and or is all of this prospective?
The permitting is in place for all of it, and the courts have cleared the way to start building it. Those different colors refer to phases, and I guess I would have to turn to Bruce Carr in the audience to get any deeper into Port McKenzie than that.
And you know how far that first segment is from Port McKenzie up to where it turns a different color?
That green one?
Yeah.
Probably 2 or 3 miles.
Why don't you come forward and state your name and affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bruce Carr, Director of Strategic Planning of the Alaska Railroad. You are correct. The phases there show how we've broken the project down for a number of different reasons to include how it can be best financed. And I believe you all received a presentation last week from Mr. Odinson and Mr. O'Leary, as well as the Matsu Borough on the Port Mac extent. Each one of those is a little bit different segment. Where the way it's built right now, we've done a lot of work in the port, and we're starting to build that green line. And then we're also working up near Houston, and we're starting to come south. Other than that, it's, you know, some of the mileage is like 5 miles, some of it is like 8 miles, some of it is, I think, that blue line kind of right there in the middle is about 16 miles, something of that nature. That's about all there is.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any questions? Okay, proceed, Murray.
The only other thing that I found interesting about, well, there's lots of interesting things about it, but the plan is to build all the embankment in those different phases, and then the last phase is to actually lay the rail, and that'll happen all in one project. That should be pretty interesting to watch. The plan does a lot of the typical things you would expect. We have a robust public input program that's brewing up. So we're going to be looking for comment from local governments, users, commuters, lots of different people that have an interest in the plan. There's also intergovernmental coordination features so that other agencies that care about have an interest in transportation or in the railroad are going to be involved. So it's state, federal, and local. So all of those kinds of typical, here's what we're doing kind of features will be part of the plan. We have a steering committee consisting of those five people. You, of course, know Commissioner Bell, Commissioner Kemp, and Commissioner Sullivan. Eugene Retze is the president of the White Pass and Yukon Route. He's agreed to participate, as has Christopher Adneson, whom you heard from not long ago about the railroad. These five people met last fall and gave us considerable guidance for how they want us to execute the plan. And I'm going to show you some of that guidance. These people will meet again probably midsummer when the plan has kind of evolved a ways and when we have some pretty hard information to give them and seek more detailed guidance at that time. I don't know if this isn't a little bit unique in state planning endeavors to have a steering committee consisting of people like that, but we think it's going to work out well for us, and certainly all five are very interested in participating. So this is the first slide of guidance. They want us to think big. Take a look at 4 and 5 there. They want us to think big and look for new extensions and relocations. But in 4, they want us to at least seriously contemplate the possibility of commuter service in the rail belt area. So there's a lot of numbers to crunch. There's a lot of analysis to do. But we've been asked to think big, and I think most of us involved in the project kind of appreciate that sort of guidance. Number 6 mentions island railroads. An island railroad is one that goes from one place to another and is not connected with any other railroad. So you could say that the White Pass route is an island railroad. But in Alaska's history, there were others. There was an island railroad associated with Nome, and a big one associated with the Kennecott Copper Mine that brought copper product to Tidewater up the Cordova, area. And that's a piece of Alaska history that I don't think is well understood. Our plan, we're just reviewing the history chapter now, and you'll learn a lot of stuff in it. Very, very interesting history.
Thank you. Representative Feige has a question, Murray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the two items, one, the island railroad is essentially where you use barge service to run rail cars to a shoreside terminal, and then the rail line extends from that shoreside terminal inland to some destination.
Through the chair, you can do it that way, yes. And in fact, the Alaska Railroad does have rail barge connections with Canada and with the lower 48. But the word island railroad just means basically Tidewater to some inland point. So in the case of the Kennecott, it would be delivering copper ore to ships that would carry it in bulk.
Okay, and then my second
follow-up, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the commuter service, you say particularly between Mat-Su and Anchorage, you know, it's not a problem for the commuter to drive his car to the rail line. and then say to Palmer or West Hill or wherever, and then catch the train into town. The problem exists at the other end. What do you do when you get to Anchorage?
When
the commuter gets to Anchorage, got a suitcase, has a lunchbox, as he get from the train station to work. And that's, I mean, that's something that really needs a lot of perhaps forceful direction towards the bus system in Anchorage.
Through the chair, yes, sir. I absolutely would agree with that. We shouldn't be promoting or trying to develop just one part of the system. It has to account for, is there a place to park your car at the beginning of the trip in the morning, and is there a way to get to where you really want to go? And I think those of us who've maybe visited metropolitan areas that have really elaborate subway systems and all that, where you can pretty much ride the subway to within a block or two of wherever you want to go, we know it's not going to be like that for Anchorage. So we have to have a pairing of the rail and other means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, we have a bus system in Anchorage. I don't know what kind of subsidy they receive from either the state or local government, but it certainly would, if they could get creative about the scheduling of their buses and their terminal locations, that's probably something that could be required of them in the future. And I don't think, I mean, it fits right in with this. It could save people money and commuter costs. It could relieve congestion on the Glen Highway. It could do a lot of things, but that is the key critical point. That's all.
Thank you. I think that's a wonderful idea, and so I hope you take that with you back to your committee.
We'll do it. More guidance from the steering committee. Focus on resource development. Obviously, trains are best used when it's high bulk, high heavyweight items, and in the lower 48 now, as well as here, you're seeing trains be used for movement of petroleum products. Here it's refined petroleum products, but in the lower 48 you're seeing lots and lots of trains carrying crude oil from the Bakken reserve in North Dakota to any refinery that wants to pay them to deliver it. It costs more money to deliver petroleum crude oil by train than by pipeline, but at $100 a barrel, I guess people figure they can afford it. So focus on resource development, focus on the Arctic and all of the attention we're giving to the Arctic. And as I mentioned, the steering committee is going to reconvene following task 7, which is the draft market analysis, which we expect to have in front of them sometime midsummer.
You know what, another thing that I think would be good for the committee to at least look at and think about is if Alaska had a transportation infrastructure fund, that the benefits that it would have to the state as a whole, and when you're having a plan, when you're looking at the plan for what could be done and how it could happen, if we had a transportation infrastructure fund, that would make a big difference, because the planning process would be able to work around that, and I think it would be very beneficial. So,
indeed, Madam Chair, the plan like this could have many uses, and certainly guiding the use of such a fund would be one of them. Okay, these next couple of slides are the content that you'll see in the plan, and these are things that are specified in the federal act and in guidelines that are being issued. And they're all the typical features you would expect in any kind of a transportation plan. And remember, we're going to be thinking big and talking about building railroad extensions and how that kind of thing works, but we're also having to look at the immediate kinds of issues and concerns that the railroads have, and chief among those are the at-grade intersections that have to be addressed for safety concerns, and which are the one of the most significant priorities of investments and rail planning. So we're going to be thinking small too. We're going to be looking at the total inventory of both rail systems, track condition, everything you want to know about both of those railroads. We'll be looking at the intermodal connections. We'll be looking at the history of publicly funded projects. Now, we're not going to be looking too seriously at high-speed rail. You'll see that mention of high-speed in the rail plan content because the federal government has an interest in high-speed, but we don't see it happening here. High-speed is defined as 125 miles or faster, and you can't do that with any at-grade crossings, and you really have to have a huge amount of passenger traffic to justify it. So I don't think we're going to be seeing much in that way, but those words are in the guidance, and so we have to acknowledge them. We're looking out 20 years. We should be updating this every 5 years. Certainly an update will not be as elaborate or as expensive as a whole new planning effort. There is a Department of Transportation approval process. There are guidelines that are in draft right now. Our plan will meet those guidelines.
Okay, and Representative has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Marie. The details, you know, we're looking at 20 years, having to update it every on the slide that you were on. Okay. When was the last time we actually updated our plan?
Through the chair, 1990, sir.
So it's been like 23 years. And because we haven't updated it, have we lost anything in terms of opportunity, financing, funding, et cetera? What has happened as a result?
I think Mr. Carr might be more authoritative on answering that in any depth, but I think the answer is no, we haven't lost anything. But
Madam Chair, could we call Mr. Carr?
Mr. Carr, come forward and state your name and affiliation, and kind of go into that a little bit. Tell us what you think about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Bruce Carr, Alaska Railroad Director, Strategic Planning. As Murray mentioned, the last update to the state rail plan, which was published in 1985, was 1990. To accommodate the joint railroad tunnel through Whittier. The original state plan was required by what was called a program, the Local Rail Freight Assistance Program, and that was an attempt by the Federal Railroad Administration at that time and the USDOT to assist local communities in improving freight connections within the local area. The program was very small. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. This was back in the late 80s and early 90s. And when you started getting the six-year federal highway authorization bills, and we go way back, I think the first one was Ice-T. You had Ice-T, and then I think you had T-21, and then you just keep going to the current MAP-21. The whole program has changed. How these particular items have been funded have all changed. So to really compare, if you want, a 1990 environment of federal funding to today is really not possible because the whole philosophy has changed. The Federal Railroad Administration itself does not have what's called programmatic funding in the way that Federal Highways does or the Federal Transit Administration. The FRA really main focus is safety, rail safety. And then, of course, they're responsible for Amtrak. And in MAP 21, they've gained a couple of more responsibilities, which, frankly, I don't understand yet because it's so new. But the question is, have we lost federal funding as a result of not having a state plan? At this point in time, I think the honest answer is no, we have not. The program is changing, though. Again, MAP 21, as Murray pointed out, the Passenger Rail Investment and Improvement Act of 2008, told the states, if you don't have a state rail plan, you will not be eligible for some federal programs. And those federal programs are those that would be most applicable to especially a freight railroad, and most importantly to a combination freight passenger railroad like the Alaska Railroad, which were one of the unique railroads in the country. So it is extremely important that we have this particular state rail plan in place. But more importantly, as Murray pointed out, we have a overall system. We have a rail system, we have a highway system, we have a marine system, we have an air system. And all of that has to work together in order to have a good, efficient, low-cost, highly compatible transportation system. So it's important to have that as well.
Representative Isaacson has a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, to follow up. And thanks, Bruce, for bringing this out. But could you describe, so that it's at least on the record and the committee understands, have we the major impact from what you were just saying, as I hear, is that we will lose out on federal funding if we don't do this plan now because of MAP 21 requirements, as I understood it. And the other part would be, as compared to other states, I understand that we're kind of lagging behind a lot of states with railroad entities in keeping our plan up to date, and subsequently we might be behind when it comes to looking at capital operational expansion opportunities and et cetera, because we've concentrated just on basically a core corridor and the necessities of bringing us up to speed for this passenger safety stuff, for the technical term. So
I like stuff.
Can you explain some of that? I mean, what necessitates us on a regular basis having a plan update every 5 years at a minimum?
Let me go back, if I can, and maybe make a little extension of your comment there about if we don't have a state rail plan, we're going to lose federal funding. Let's make that a little bit more accurate. If we don't have a state rail plan, there are federal programs that we will not be eligible to participate in. For example, there is a new program in the FRA for realigning railroads. You have a particular project up in your neighborhood, and Representative Feige, to try to realign the Alaska Railroad. Well, those are grant programs. If you don't have a state rail plan that says it's the state's vision to realign that railroad, we won't be eligible for that particular fund. The funds that we are receiving right now, the programmatic funds through the Federal Transit Administration, are not affected by this plan at this point in time. That's based on our eligibility as we move year-round regularly scheduled passenger service. So that, unless that happens, or as you were saying, some of the other stuff that we've gone through, the positive train control, if that's not put in place, that is something totally outside the state rail plan. The state rail plan, though, if you go back to some of the comments that Murray had in his presentation there, you will see where it says the state makes a commitment to what kind of passenger service it's going to have. So, you know, these are all intertwined in a way that when you come back to it, the state rail plan becomes a core planning document for not only the state of Alaska, but also for its railroads, whether we were state-owned or whether we were private. To answer your question about are we behind the times with the lower 48 states, there's 49 other states, and some are way ahead of us, some are where we are now, and some have looked at their plan that might be 6 years old, and they're trying to analyze whether or not it meets the requirements of the federal plan. I think within the next couple of years, you'll find that all the states have upgraded their plans simply to become eligible for some of these programs that are coming down the line. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. It is important, as Representative Feige noted, that this plan be done and coordinated with other modes, other planning endeavors. So we will be coordinating this plan with the state's long-range transportation policy plan. The effort to redevelop that plan will kick off shortly here. and be run out of the same building as the rail plan is. That's another one of these planning efforts that needs to be updated every 5 years. Map 21, as Bruce said, will be requiring coordination of plans, so we will be working with the other modes and working with other planning endeavors to make sure this thing fits with the rest of the state's planning effort. We have a pretty robust public involvement program. We're going to have public meetings in Haines, Skagway, and the other places you see listed there. And we're going to have an online town hall kind of thing where once plan elements have been published, you'll be able to go online, read the chapter or the item, and comment to us on it. Nothing takes the place of a honest-to-God public hearing in some place in Alaska. We wouldn't want to deprive anyone of the opportunity to come and talk to us that way, but this online thing will be more convenient for a lot of people and reach more people. There is a 26-person technical advisory group that our commissioner has appointed. They will be having their first meeting next week, and there are 650 people on our email list right now that we will be sending updates, kind of status reports and that kind of thing too. So you have copies of this presentation. If at some later time you want to call and talk to me about any of it, I'd be happy to talk to you individually or to your staff people about any aspect of this presentation. And I sure appreciate having the chance to be with you today.
Murray, and then I'll have Representative Isaacson ask his question. Is there any kind of a deadline or a time that you're thinking that you will be finished, or is that open-ended?
It's not open-ended. We are looking to have it finished this calendar year, preferably somewhere in mid-fall, I'm thinking.
Okay. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You took the first part of my question, and so that's good to know. The second part of the question, is this being done with funds already within the department, or is there additional funds that we're going to have to lift?
Through the chair, we have the money to do this effort. This is money that has been in the department's hands for a while, and we won't be coming back to you to ask for more money to do the planning. Might be interesting if we came back to ask you for the money to build a rail line to Nome, but not for the plan.
When you come up with the final plan, let me know, because I might even convene a meeting in the interim just for us to get an update on it.
It'd be sometime in the fall. I would be happy to do that, and I appreciate the offer.
Okay. All right. And I have a bit of trivia I would like to know, if you don't know, I've got a feeling that Jeff might. But it was T21 and now it's Map 21. Where does the 21 come from?
The 21st century.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
I do have an afterword. I am reading a book called I Married the Klondike. It was written in the 20s by a gal who was a school teacher in Dawson City. And she talks about riding the White Pass Railroad up to where she took a riverboat to get all the rest of the way to Dawson. She talks about getting off the train at Lake Bennett to have lunch. And lunch consisted of moose meat and macaroni and cheese. She paid a dollar for it.
Representative Isaacson.
Well, with that, and I appreciate your love of books, there is a great book on the Klondike, McCarthy Railroad, and the poignant thing in that is, and I hope you incorporate it in the plan, is how to incentivize private investment for the construction of the railroad. That was built with private funds, New York bankers and all that, and they laid it up down and they took it up. And if we were able to incentivize some of our resource development with anchor tenants that have sizable projects that could benefit from having a railroad come It would be great if we leveraged their money with ours so that we didn't bear the brunt and then have to maintain something that had no further use after mine life was gone or something. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Murray. Murray, we really appreciate it. And does anyone on the committee have any questions for... We have an audience here that in the front row that's got a lot of knowledge, and so if anybody would like to ask any questions, then now would be the time. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Kreis Tompkins.
A latent question. I'm curious about the Glen Corridor between Anchorage and the Mat-Su, and what role, if any, or what studies might be coming down the turnpike as far as commuter rail possibilities?
Through the chair, we will be looking at the commuter prospects for the Anchorage and Mat-Su area, that connection. We have been instructed to do that by the steering committee. It's something we naturally want to do anyway. I just can't promise you that the numbers will come together to justify such a thing, but we will look at it.
Go ahead, Representative Kreis Tompkins.
And I assume as though Mr. Carr might have thoughts too. I was just curious, could you briefly summarize how the numbers have panned out with past studies concerning commuter rail in that corridor?
Through the chair, I have no idea, sir.
I would imagine it would be really great if we had the population year-round that we have in the summer. We might be able to, the numbers might look a lot better, but Murray.
Madam Chair, I think Bruce probably can shed a little more light on it than I can, and there have been past examinations, if you'll.
Okay, Bruce.
Madam Chair, through the chair, Representative, the Alaska Railroad.
State your full name.
Okay. Again, Bruce Carr, Alaska Railroad Director of Strategic Planning. The Alaska Railroad did, in 2001 through 2002, do a complete study of commuter rail between the valley, including Wasilla, Palmer, Anchorage, down to Girdwood, including the airport project. The program, and I would point out Representative Feige's earlier comments about the Golden Mile, which is how people get to a rail station and then how people get to work, is something that needs to be worked out. It's nothing unique. It's being done all over the country. So it's just a matter of the transit agencies, if you want, banding together to decide that this is something that they need to do for the public, for the commuting public. The numbers, you never know until you actually run the service. The numbers are not high. They've gone as high as maybe 700 a day. Traditionally, there was very high numbers just to make the system look like it was going to be worthwhile. I think the lower 48 transit agencies got beat up enough over that now we tend to be very conservative. In most cases in the last 5 years when you've had new transit agencies open up, in the first year they've exceeded what their passenger numbers were expected to be. There's 15,000 commuters that go between the valley and Anchorage every day. If I got 10% of those for the Alaska Railroad, or whoever does it, a regional transportation agency, whatever, you're talking about 1,500 people each way. So that's 3,000 people. That's 1,500 vehicles off the road, etc. That Golden Mile is very important, though. You have the Sharevan program. You have people who, from the valley, told us they would drive in Monday morning, park their car at the train station, and then take the train back and forth until Friday afternoon and then drive back out to town. We've had people tell us they're going to park their Sharevan down at the railroad, and they'll all gather together up at Wasilla or Palmer, get on the train, get in their Sharevan, do their thing, in the afternoon come back, park their Sharevan, get back on the train and do their thing. The one thing that we learned in 2000 is the commuting pattern up here in Alaska is no different than the commuting pattern in Seattle or Boston or Dallas or San Francisco. People get up, they get to the station, they ride the train, they go to work, and they reverse it, and they do it 5 days in a row. So I think, you know, if we look at it from the viewpoint of, is South Central ready for alternative options for commuting? I think that's something that the state rail plan can answer.
Good question. Okay. No more questions? Thank you very much, Murray.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And to let the committee know that we will meet here on Tuesday, the 26th, and we will hear three bills, House Bill 109, House Joint Resolution 10, and House Bill 123. And the meeting is adjourned at 1:44. Thank you.